Madam Clerk, do we have a quorum?
Yes, Madam President, everyone is present except Member Ruth.
Yes, she is absent and excused.
Who has the board goals?
Member Rutherford, would you please read the board goals?
Yes, Matsu-Susitna Borough School District Vision, Mission, Beliefs, Principles, and Goals. The vision, Matsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission, Matsu Borough School District prepares all students for success. Beliefs, we believe that the needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. All students can and want to learn. Participation of stakeholders is crucial to student success. Guiding principles are stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, respect, collaboration, and commitment. Goals, we will improve student success, achievement, and performance. We will increase the graduation rate. We will maintain and continuously improve safe and healthy environments for our students and staff. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth.
Thank you. I would like to ask Mr. Joe Schmidt, School Safety and Emergency Preparedness Coordinator, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Could I please have someone move the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda.
I'll second. Is there any objection? Seeing none, we will move on to persons to be heard. Madam Clerk, would you please read the rules?
Yes. Under persons to be heard on non-agenda items, the following guidelines apply. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for the public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the borough clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. A maximum of 1 hour per meeting. This is the first half hour. We have one person listed, Molly Boyer.
Is it ready to roll? Okay, well, thank you for letting me come today. I'm with the, pardon me? Oh, I'm Molly Boyer with the Valley Community for Recycling Solutions. And happy solstice. And happy Matsu Borough Recycles Day. The Matsu Borough has once again proclaimed December 21st as Matsu Borough Recycles Day in honor of the many anniversaries that the Recycling Center has in December. The very first meeting to ever talk about recycling happened in December of 1997. And in December of 2002, we moved from being every 3 months recycling on parking lots to our first facility on the Palmer-Wasilla Highway in December of 2002. And then in December of 2010, we moved into our permanent facility where we can provide a solid recycling program for the long-term good of all. And we've had an amazing relationship with the Matsu School District over those now 19 years. And we are very proud of what the school district has done and is doing to keep recycling growing for the school district. I know there are budget issues which make it hard to move forward with a district-wide program at this time, but I would love to encourage you to work, if at all possible, to get recycling at least in the job description of the custodians. This could help move forward with schools who independently want to start recycling programs. and not have a stumbling block there, because if it's not in their job description, it can be a employee can say it's not in my job description and not help out with the program. And it was a principal who informed me of this stumbling block. So I highly encourage you to encourage that as part of the contract negotiations, to have that inserted into the job description of the custodians at this during this process, so it's not put off for another contract in the future. And with that, I appreciate all you do, and keep up the good work. You're awesome, and that you take time to commit to our community. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to be heard at this time on non-agenda items? Seeing none, we will move on to borough and city reports. I see Mayor Cottle in the audience.
Superintendent Stone, Dr. Dearman, board members, I have just a couple things tonight. Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla. First thing is this Sunday at the Menard Center is a Christmas friendship dinner. This will be year 26. And the dinner is from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Dinner is free. If you need a ride, you need Meals on Wheels, or you just want to volunteer, you can call 354-6115. Then coming up on December 31st at the Menard Center from 6 to 10 p.m. is the Church on the Rock New Year's Eve Bash. That'll be with dodgeball, bounce houses, ice skating. Everything's free. This is basically slated for kids. And that number is 373-7910 for more information. And don't forget about the largest fireworks show in the valley is in Wasilla at Adida Park on New Year's Eve. Some people get confused. It's on New Year's Eve, and this will be at 8 p.m. If you're 20 minutes late, you missed the show, so you don't want to be late. And then starting in January, Wasilla will celebrate 100 years of being a road stop, truck stop, or along the train stop. We'll have one event a month. The first one will be on January 7th at the Menard Center at 7 p.m. Tickets are $10 each. There'll be food, beer and wine, so it's slated for older people, and there'll be dancing, and it'll be fun. It'll be like a 100-year class reunion. So anyway, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Cottle. We'll move ahead now with administrative reports, and I will turn it over to Superintendent Stone.
Yes, President Dearman, members of the board. We have an administrative report, and this will be provided by Assistant Superintendent Luke Fulp and our safety coordinator, Joe Schmidt.
Thank you, Superintendent Stone, President Dearman, members of the school board. We're here tonight to present on a follow-up from last year, and it was an objective or goal that was defined at the start of the year during the board's retreat, but it's a follow-up on the charter school safety upgrades that we identified last year and brought before the school board. So I'll briefly get into this presentation of material and turn it over to Joe Schmidt once we get it into the assessment of infrastructure and talk about the work that he did on this project. So just to remind folks, the objective for this presentation is really to make sure that our charter schools and the safety infrastructure that exists within charter schools is consistent with board policy. So it was board policy 6190 that we brought forth last November, and specifically the clause that's in this portion of the policy that states a charter school shall conduct its program in a facility that satisfies all health and safety requirements applicable to other district schools. What we identified in our safety walkthroughs is that some of the schools didn't have the infrastructure that we really had throughout all other district schools, and that was brought forth by Mr. Schmidt, and we realized it was something that did involve the school board because of this specific policy that speaks to it. Following that, during the board retreat, the board identified a goal, an objective that dealt with school safety and the completion of our work with charter schools. So following the construction of Front Terrace, which was ongoing at the time, and the design was being done when we initially brought this issue forward, we were going to reevaluate the charter schools. So the board goal is to evaluate charter school safety infrastructure and make administrative recommendations to the school board to align facility infrastructure with board policy 6190. And that is what we're doing tonight. We're essentially completing this board goal by doing a formal presentation to you all tonight so that you can understand what are the issues that we've identified at this point and our course of action moving forward. So briefly, I'm just going to touch on the assessment. And really, this is Mr. Schmidt's portion, but I want to talk about that the first part of this timeline that you see. So on November 4th, 2015, we had a board work session, as you'll recall. So I was going to say to the new members, but Member Ruth's not here right now. But to all of you who remember, we had a work session in which Saul Friedman, Mr. Schmidt, Mr. Brown, Executive Director of Operations, we all presented our current findings and the infrastructure that was needed in charter schools. That was discussed in a work session that evening. The very next meeting that we had, the second meeting in November, we introduced as a non-action item a resolution that was written that was from the school district for the borough assembly, and it encouraged the borough assembly to free up money that was in their school site acquisition reserve for this purpose. So at the time, we had identified $1.7 million of needs. That resolution was approved as an action item on December 2nd, and then it was presented to the assembly during our joint school district borough assembly meeting on December 8th. So that resolution was with them, it was discussed, and as you recall, during our official budget request and budget process last year, a major portion of the school site acquisition reserve was actually used to fund our 6% request. So that money is essentially gone. The school board didn't stop with moving this issue forward. However, the board dedicated $100,000 within the CIP authorization that happened on June 1st, 2016 for this cause. And so we had $100,000, and we still have that $100,000 sitting in the CIP account. And we'll talk to you a little bit about our findings and how we're going to utilize those funds and what other funds might be freed up for this purpose, and we'll discuss that later in the presentation. At this point, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Mr. Schmidt, and he'll talk through his assessments and recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Felt. Board members, Dr. Dierman, Mr. Stone, good evening. The dates flagged on the left side of the sheet were when I was realizing and confirming that the charter schools did not have the same physical plant infrastructure as the other schools did for safety. Realizing that, of course, we still prepare for emergencies. I talked about procedural duplication. If the schools have a button you push to lock the front door, then obviously in an emergency, the first thing you want to do is run over, get somebody to lock the front door. We can do the same thing, but it's just manual. And that way the charter schools were at least doing the same kinds of things, although manually, that the other schools were doing in an automated fashion. So, of course, we all agreed that the automated fashion is the best way to do it, but we were performing the same function, it's just in a different way. The flags over on the other side, those all represent an inspection of each building that I did. The ones all in 2016 were more along the lines of, I of course would check all the systems like I would any other audit, but I was looking at what they might have. For instance, one of the charter schools has a remote button they can lock the front door remotely, and anything that might be in existence right now that we could morph into a conglomerated system. So anyway, that's kind of the way that I went through the audits and coming up with what we have here today. On the second round of audits there, the defibrillators are already in place, IPTVs are already in place, and almost five of the six charter schools had addressable fire detection systems. The one that doesn't has a firewall between two halves of the building, and because there's not a sprinkler or addressable fire system there, we're allowed to have up to 49 people on either side of that building at any time. Now, during day-to-day normal operations, we're in compliance, but if we had a big event or something where more people came in, we could find ourselves in a fire code situation if too many people got in there. So obviously these are the sprinkler and the fire detection systems are of the utmost importance. We're almost there, but we would have to address the one charter school with the fire detection lack. As far as you know, knowing that when funding comes, it may not all come at once for everything at one big project. We might get it piecemeal, and so to that end, I assessed which is the most important, you know, and kind of put a priority order on the different systems. And I feel like while you can see the physical effects of locking doors and gates and barricades and those kinds of things, building communications is I believe of the utmost importance during an emergency. You can have a locking door system, but if someone gets through, you've got to be able to communicate to that building and explain where the danger is. All of our ALICE protocols call for a lot of communication, and so I felt that was the top of the list for, you know, when money comes, that's one of the first things we should get. Remotely locking exterior doors, I think, would be number two. That's based on experience. When you review the calls that we get, it most, if not all of them, we have a little bit of time. Sometimes the thing that we're worried about is in the parking lot. Sometimes they're not in the parking lot, but we know that we might have trouble coming. And in that case, we use that time to take steps to ensure safety. We lock down, we send safety coordinators on site, we close gates and things, and we use that time the best we can. So being able to quickly lock a door and maybe use the time that you save to make a phone call to 911 or whatever it might be, I felt was an important piece. An automated duress call to a security contractor. You can't have a machine call 911, but a machine can call a contractor. In our case, it's Guardian, and then they call 911 for us. They're instructed to do so without checking first. If they get a signal from one of our buildings, they're not to call us and say, hey, I've got a signal. Are you guys okay? They just call the police and get them coming. And so that's another time saver. Again, we can call 911 on the phone if we didn't have that system, but an automated integrated system we felt is the way to go. The exterior strobe light is one, we kind of nicknamed it the bus strobe just because in most cases it's in the bus loop where the buses can see it. Each school has two alternate sites where the buses are to go if they ever see the light flashing. It's an indicator that the building's in trouble in some way. It also indicates to anybody coming to the building, if they're on a bicycle, if they're in their mom's car, if they're walking, whatever it is, if anyone sees that strobe light flashing, the rule is keep moving because something's happening in the building and it's not safe and the doors are going to be locked. So that's the final piece of what we would bring parity. There's one item on here that other schools have, and it's magnetic holds. When we talked about this the first time around, we mentioned magnetic holds that hold the door opens. What we do is procedurally, we mechanically lock all the doors that are held open during any kind of an emergency event, be it a fire, duress, or lockdown event. The doors close, and when they close, they're locked, and you can't, ingress is stopped, and egress is still allowed per the fire code. In the charter school situation, in most, if not all cases, we would have to build a door to hold open with a magnet or build a wall and a door to hold open with a magnet. So the security benefit versus what it would cost and the amount of effort it would take to put those in didn't seem to pencil. And so you won't see the magnetic holds on this list, although it was on previous lists. So that's where they went. Okay, so the cost now is the total is $778, and Mr. Weiss is here behind me to my right, unless he ran off by now, which no, he didn't. And this is a little lower than what we projected last time. But remember, I hadn't done my full audit, my second audit round last time, and Frontieris was still in the mix. Frontieris was in a place in its construction whereby, and that was probably, you know, 20% of this cost, whereby the contractor is able to work with the administration and move some things around and put all the systems in place that we're talking about here tonight. So that school is up to the same standard. It's not a Linnell, it's a different kind of system, but it does the same, from a security standpoint, it does the same function. So that one's in good shape. So when that came out and the magnetic door holds came out, the price came down quite a bit. And what we're left with is that total there. Is you Luke? Okay. And I'll turn it back over to Luke.
Promised Joe he wouldn't have to present this this piece of it, although it is his final meeting, so we might want to do something special here to put him under the gun here. So the fiscal impact, what we wanted to do was identify resources that could be help with this initiative, and We knew that the charter schools, not only does the district have fund balance and reserve, which we'll highlight in during the CAFR presentation later on in the agenda, but the charter schools also have a carryover amount that they maintain, and they also have CIP balances or balances in our capital improvement project fund in which they maintain. And so we wanted to make sure that the board was fully aware of this and that everyone knew what the resources are that are available to assist with this. And if you think of it in the sense of all of the funds that go into unassigned fund balance to assist the district and to fund our own CIP accounts, those are really residual dollars from the entire district operations, less charter schools, because charter schools are maintaining their own budgets, their own carryover. It's almost separate. So I thought it was appropriate that the board at least see this information and know that we do have some resources to help with this initiative. So what you have in that first column is their carryover amount. That's the amount that charter schools are currently carrying in the general fund. And that's just, it's similar to, or it's a portion of our unassigned fund balance that we distribute back to charter schools. And actually in the FY17 winter revised budget, which the board will vote on tonight, we are making those funds available to the schools to use in the current year with the revision. And we talked about that last meeting. In addition to that, they also have CIP reserves in which they can currently access, and that's represented in that second column from the left. If you combine the totals of the carryover and the CIP, which both for the purposes of safety infrastructure, both amounts would be the safety infrastructure costs would be allowable costs under both reserves, then you have the total of about $2.5 million amongst all charter schools. So given our safety and security system needs by school of totaling, as Mr. Schmidt stated, $778,000, you can see that by and large, most every school has the resources they need to take care of the costs that we've identified. And we've done, Mr. Tony Weiss, our capital planning and project construction manager, has done a great job of getting out there and making sure we have good quotes on the safety infrastructure that needs to be in place in our schools. So. And working with contractors for the installation of that as well. So I guess this is our last slide, and what we want to commit to the school board is that we as administration see the need, we know the need, and we know that the the board clearly doesn't want to change board policy. So what we need to do is make sure charter schools come into line with maintaining the same health and safety requirements as other district schools. And we intend to do that, and we know that there's resources available to help with that initiative. And as Mr. Schmidt stated, it might be not be all at once based on, you know, their plans for spending some of these reserves or whatnot, but we've already presented this to charter school principals, and they knew that this was coming. And so in our last charter school principal meeting, we shared these numbers with them at that time, and we really also let them know where the board was positioned and that this wasn't a goal of the board's. And so, given that the school site acquisition reserve at the borough is essentially depleted and we don't see a lot of capital funding money on the horizon from the state, we know that this is still a need and that we need to take care of this for our students, and we intend to do so. So we will continue to work with our charter schools, and we will also update the board as to the status of this periodically, I suppose, through the Board Connect and other means. So if there's any questions, we can answer those at this time. And that essentially concludes the presentation.
Member Tremor.
So we have one school that doesn't have an available balance to cover all of that and is gonna come in at $72,000 under. How are we addressing that?
So that one school is Midnight Sun Family Learning Center. They have, if we were to attempt to fund all of their needs, they would have a deficit of $72,000. They would need $72,000. What we could do is work with them over time to make sure that this gets done. We could, which we've done in other cases, loan them money from our general fund with the intent that they repay that over a couple years. The other thing, as Mr. Schmidt stated, in Joe Schmidt's recommendations, You can see that the third line down, remote locking, exterior doors, duress call, and exterior strobe. Our preference is that those systems are fully integrated. So they all work together, you press a button and it happens. But we also know that they could be kind of one-offs and we could install one at a time and make sure that, you know, depending on funding availability, we could just piecemeal that. It's not what our preference is, but there's a couple ways that we could do this. We could just do as much as we could with Midnight Sun, given their resources, and then we could also work with them on a loan arrangement that they repay.
Member Larson.
Thank you. I hear a lot of terms like you presented it to the school, the charter school principals, that it can be done, that it will eventually be done. I haven't heard anything like it's going to be done. We've got a timeline that we're going to get this done, that it's going to go out to bid. So is this a maybe, or are we going to actually get this done?
Superintendent Stone would like to address that.
Yeah, so through the chair, Member Larson, what we do is we have several sessions with our charter schools. And so we had a fall session, we discussed this, and we will have a winter session. And so what we would like to do is take this forward with them, present this to them, and then make a recommendation to them for using their fund balance. So that's the plan.
Member Larson.
Making a recommendation, that means they can come out and say they don't want this? They don't want this security and safety to occur?
So to the chair, Member Larson, they could say that, but the policy, what we'll do is we will direct them to the policy, and we believe we're going to get there, so.
Yeah. Through the chair, our commitment at this point is to kind of address this at the lowest level possible. And if it becomes an issue where we run into resistance, is bringing it back before the school board, because as Superintendent Stone stated, it's not compliant with board policy as it currently stands. So we've not been met with resistance when we presented in that charter school meeting.
Member Michelson.
Would you say then that you would come back to us in a certain number of weeks or months, perhaps, with a plan for kind of going off of what Ole has just indicated, like a timeline of what would be done after you have that meeting?
Yeah. You want to take this one?
Yeah, so through the chair, Member Michelson, we, like I said, we will have a winter meeting, and we believe that we'll have a resolution to this by the end of the year. That would be our timeline. So we'll have a winter meeting, we'll have a spring meeting, and we'll communicate after that winter meeting as to the progress that we've made with our charter school.
Mr. Michelson.
Then a kind of a technical question then about the CIP balances. Are those are assigned to each school, or is that a lump sum that you would negotiate, you know, spending on? I know that the carryovers are probably per school, but is the CIT per school, CIP rather, per school?
Yes, those balances are really a result of at the end of each year, similar to what the process the school board goes through with that CIP authorization, where we kind of give you a projected fund balance or year-end spending, and we make a recommendation that a transfer occur, a certain amount of money be transferred to CIP for projects that we've identified. We also allow the charter schools to go through that process, and they will, each one of them will tell us how much they want to transfer to their own independent CIP, their own individual CIP project. And so that is for each charter school. And then whatever they maintain in their operating fund is what that carryover amount represents.
Okay, thanks. And we do have a legislative priority in the form of a capital recommendation for $500,000 for charter school safety. I just want to reconfirm that. Okay.
Yes, there is a request, a capital request in under charter schools.
Are there any more questions from the board? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Folt.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks.
We will now hear from our student representative, Ms. Wagner, with a student advisory board report.
All right. We have not had a student advisory board meeting since the last time we met, but our next meeting will be January 17th at Westville Middle, and always we encourage our board members to attend. As we all know, it's finals week this week, and I wish luck to all the students in our borough, and second quarter is ending, but basketball season is starting up, and the annual Doc Larson tournament starts this weekend. I believe it's at Wasilla High School, and it's always a series of great games, and it's lots of fun. On December 9th, a group of CS50 students from Wasilla High School and Colony left to Massachusetts to view Coding Fair at Harvard, and we were able to view codes from all the Harvard students and their final pieces before their class was ending, and we also gave the instructor at Eskimo Yo-Yo, and a few of the students taught him how to use it, so that was really fun. And anyway, good luck to all the students on the finals, and our next meeting is January 7th at Wasilla Middle.
Thank you, Ms. Wagner. Mr. Stone?
Yeah, so President Dearman, members of the board, I just want to remind folks that tomorrow's the last day of the first semester, so we're halfway through, and we're just about racing through a full year before we know it. But Friday will be a work day for our staff, and then school for the second semester will reopen on January 9th, 2017. So we have to get used to saying 2017 now. But so also, before you have the Mat-Su Gazette, I'd like you guys to take an opportunity to read a great student publication. It's a joint effort by Colony High School, Wasilla High School, and Burchell. I think there's even an article in there from a Palmer High School student as well. But this publication is done in partnership with the Flippin Group, and so they underwrote this last edition here, and just want to recognize them for that contribution. Mat-Su Frontiersman calendar, there's complimentary copies from the Frontiersman, and the district advertises in the month of May, honoring all Mat-Su Borough School District graduates. And there's an annual Christmas friendship dinner from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Menard Sports Complex, and volunteers are always welcome there. If you're interested, if you call 354-6115, you can jump into that. And we don't have a separate budget update this evening. The school board will be considering the FY17 winter budget revision and the FY16 comprehensive annual financial report, or the CAFR. So those two action items will serve as our update on financial information. Mr. Folt presented the FY17 winter budget during the December 7th school board meeting, so there will be no formal presentation tonight. However, administration will be available and questions prior to the school board voting on the revision. So, and then the FY16 CAFR, it's listed as an action item that'll allow the board to formally accept the audited financial statements. Because the 16 CAFR consists of financial records for year ending June 30th, 2016, and then there's no ability to make adjustments to these records, the board will be accepting this and not approving the statements. And so as a result of this technicality, the FY16 CAFR does not warrant two readings. That's why you're seeing it tonight for the first time as an action item. And then we're happy to have Eric Campbell here tonight, assurance partner with BDO here tonight, and he'll be providing a formal presentation on the FY16 CAFR. And administration will also be available for questions following Mr. Campbell's presentation. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Could I please have someone move the consent agenda minutes of December 7th, 2016?
I move the consent agenda, which consists of the minutes of December 7th, 2016.
Second.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, I will now call for a 10-minute break. All right.
He's in the room.
Can I have someone please move action item A, second reading board policy 5122.5, open closed campus.
I move action item A, second reading board policy 5112.5, open and closed campus.
Second.
Do we have an administrative report?
President Dimmer, members of the board, I have coming forward Executive Director for Instruction, Amy Spargo, and she does have some additional information for you tonight.
Is it on? I did some follow-up research after the first reading of this draft policy, and the Board Connect had the results of the community survey, and I am able to answer any questions about that. There were a lot of comments that I did not include in the Board Connect, everything from local businesses who have businesses near the schools who said, this is a great idea, we'd love to have high school kids in our businesses, to parents who said, it doesn't matter what you decide, I'm not letting my kid go out at lunch anyway. So there was a large range. In addition, we looked at actual numbers of students that this would impact. We used the criteria of a GPA of 3.0 or above, no discipline referrals, and less than 5 tardies, because we really wanted to focus on those students who were demonstrating responsibility. We ran the numbers for the big 3 high schools. The overall, so Colony, Palmer, and Wasilla, the overall percentage of students that would be eligible to even earn this privilege was 38%. That amounted to about 150 to 200 students per high school for juniors and seniors. We also looked at the numbers of students in that percentage that had IEPs. That was a question that was brought, and saw that of the students who were eligible, 6.1% had IEPs, which is somewhat less than the percentage of students overall that have IEPs in the high schools. That's about 13%. But that number, 13%, includes students who aren't earning grades or in programs that are not graduation programs. I know there's a lot of ways that the board could go with this. There's been conversations about piloting this at certain high schools. There's been conversations about doing more research, involving more people. We did communicate with all the Chamber of Commerce's, and we had in our survey 57 people that would just consider themselves community members did respond to our survey. 2/3 of them were in favor of this, 1/3 was not. Some of the community members were grandparents. They also wrote that in the comments, so that was interesting to me too. At this time, I think I can just answer any questions you might have, or? No?
Mr. Michelson.
So this policy would affect which schools? That'd be Sioux Valley High, Houston, Rochelle, Palmer, Colony, Wasilla.
it would allow the privilege but not require the privilege. So sites still have discretion over that, but in all honesty, there will be pressure on principals to extend that privilege. But it's not required. I know that when we spoke to the principals of the alternative schools, they did not anticipate in extending that privilege.
Okay, so we would allow it, but it would, from there on out, it would be controlled by the local principal for the most part. And then subsequently, ultimately controlled by permission granted or not given by the parent.
Currently, students have parent permission to have a class period off campus already, and they have parent permission to drive between the schools when they're accessing, so it would be similar to that. And we monitor that through stickers on their student IDs.
Would you mind just one more time the anticipated number of kids that might?
Yeah, that's a big. So about 38% of students would be met the criteria that have the 3.0 GPA, no discipline referrals, and less than 5 tardies. And that amounted to about 150 kids at Palmer High, around 200 kids at Colony High, and a number in between at Wasilla High, 194 at Wasilla High.
Just one more. Final question then. What refresh my memory on what constitutes a discipline referral?
We used out-of-school suspension. So it could be tobacco, it could be stealing, it could be, we also ruled out anybody who had any kind of a tobacco, alcohol, or drug infraction in the past year, because when we talked about this in discussion, we didn't want to allow time in the middle of the day to support a habit.
Member Larson.
So how long are the lunch hours?
It varies from school to school. We're required to have a 30-minute lunch period. Most of the schools have at least one period of the day, one lunch period that's longer. I know I can speak to the calendar best or the schedule best at Wasilla High. Lunches were 35 minutes with one day a week where that was backed up to advisory, and lunch was actually 52 minutes on that day.
Advisory meaning that it's a long lunch hour?
No, there's an advisory that backs up to lunch, and we do one lunch period instead of having a double lunch. You know, most schools have two lunch periods. Palmer has a longer lunch because they're a little smaller. They have one lunch period. And they do that on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. The days that all 7 classes meet, most of the schools just have 30-minute lunches on Mondays and Fridays.
Yeah, I noticed on your numbers that 539 students were asked and 520. Only 19 said no. That's interesting, which kind of throws off the stats down below a little bit. I'm really interested in what staff and parents had to say. When you said the parents would have to give a permission slip, what is a permission slip amount to? Is it once a year, or what are we talking about?
We would anticipate it would be a similar process to other off-campus privileges. So there's a form that kids fill out requesting it, and then the parents sign it, and it stays on file with the counselor. It can be revoked at any point, but it is once a year. Well, once a semester if your semester changed.
My concern is this is quite the privilege to leave the school. As a parent, right? I always used to know that my kids were in school and not out of school. And now, as a parent, I would be worried that lunch hour, that where my kid would be, child would be. So once a year signature, I don't know. I wonder if there's something more we could do to get a parent or a guardian permission slip for their kid to leave school because they're driving. They could do, you know, I know we can't hold them in a bubble, but we're still responsible. If this should pass, and it may pass, there will be an incident. Something will happen. And I want to make sure the parents know that you know, that their permission slips allow this to occur. That the school isn't just opening up the door and allowing the children to leave. So I just want to know how we can assure that you can never beat liability, but that the parents actually know that their kids are leaving that school ground.
To answer Mr. Larson's question, if I may make a suggestion, something that I have been thinking about, to add another level to the parent permission slip, something for the board to consider, please. To make sure that we are doing everything to add to the safety for our students that will be participating in this, could we please make sure that that parent permission slip must be notarized? Because after 25 years of being in high school, I know one thing about students. They have mastered by 11th grade one or both parent signatures. We all know that, and not to cast aspersions on anyone, but I think it would just lend another level of peace of mind to a lot of people. Some of us are sitting on this board, and I don't think that's too much to ask, because with any added responsibility that we give to anyone and any freedom does come responsibility, and I don't think that asking this when we're asking for permission to let your child leave school, that it's too great of an ask. So if that could be considered by this board, if we decide to take a vote this evening, I think that would be good.
I guess for clarification, it's not necessarily something in the policy, but you're just making a recommendation to principals to guide the actual permission process as a SOP or a standard operating practice for, is that how I understand
this? Yes, please, okay, to have those permission slips come back notarized. Are there any other comments from the board or any comments from anyone in the audience? Oh, Mr. Larson.
This is the time we can comment about this. Oh, I haven't done. I'll wait till it's our turn to actually comment about it.
Oh, please come forward and state your name, please.
My name is Larry Dierman. And I have something to say about new programs. With every new program comes a positive, and with every new program comes a negative. Stopping kids from going out or stopping them from driving because of the dangers is almost unfair. But you must understand that there will be a death, there will be a theft, there will be a drug use. Some things will be happening that you don't have to deal with at present with this new program that you are looking at opening up. It's a really important decision. I think the second level of having a parent have their papers notarized in the work that I did would be to, it won't take away the legal liability, but when, God forbid, a child is laying in a coffin and the parent is looking there, they're the ones that have to take the responsibility for that severe accident. Thank you.
Mr. Larson, anyone else from the audience? Any more comments from the board? Mr. Larson.
I take my hat off for the student government to come up with this. It's a good proposal, and it's an excellent proposal. But in my background taints my feelings about this, of course. I would love to, you know, like this, I'd love to start school at 7:30 and have it go till 5:30, all right? I don't want, and then have something to do with the kids in the evening. Because I want to hold them all in a bubble and I don't want anything to happen. i.e. the case that happened here just recently, is this horrific example that of things that can go bad. But you can't protect kids all the time, don't get me wrong. And so I have a lot of reservations. I'm not sure how I'm going to vote. I guess I'll decide that when it comes time in a few minutes. But I do have a lot of reservations. But I also know that if the kids can become responsible and do this, and if this does pass, I would like to see that permission slip. And I would like to see even a half hour or 15 minute of counseling or a course on responsibility to let these kids know that this is a privilege, and that reinforced every semester somehow that it is a privilege. And if they should abuse it, they may end up losing it for everybody, because the principal can then pull that privilege. So that needs to be stressed also. Thank you.
Mr. Michelson.
And just to take that a little bit further, there's a difference between having a right and having a responsibility, or excuse me, a privilege, and driving is a privilege. And I think that if this is managed in such a way that it is a privilege, it could be a real learning opportunity. But then I think of all the kids in our school system right now that are going from building to building throughout the course of their day, and we don't seem to have any reservations about that at all. We seem to promote the self-transportation of kids going to career tech if they have a vehicle. But there's a part of me also that's only like 51% in favor of this. And I hate to use my own personal life as an example, because it was so long ago that, you know, the lunch periods at Diamond High School in Anchorage in the mid-70s was just totally wide open. This is like the most restrictive way to actually accomplish this, by making it a privilege and really building it as a system of privileges. And my parents didn't know where I was at all. And you know, I think this will give a chance for parents who are really engaged with their children also to be part of that as well. And leaving it up to the building principal, I think, is a real good part of this structure, and that they can kind of control those circumstances a little bit and really be Johnny on the spot with revoking privileges as they see fit. They're buildings that they make rules all the time about what kids can do and what they can't, and it seems inappropriately seated with the principal in each building. And those that choose not to exercise it are going to have to realize the pressure that they will get. And I, too, like to really commend the student government for kind of bringing it forward. This is really good to bring it to kind of open our eyes to. You guys thought it was all about open lunch, but really for us, it's all about a whole bunch of other things as well. So I appreciate that.
Member Walton.
Thank you. I, too, it's a long time ago, and it's longer than anybody else here on the board was when I was in high school. We had open campus for everything, because you had 8 periods a day. One period was lunch, and it could be third hour, fourth hour, fifth hour, or sixth hour, whatever, you know, because there were 4,000 students in my school. You could leave at any time and go to school at any time. Nobody was there checking on you except when you got into class. There were things that happened, sure, but you've got everything in the control of the principal and the parents here. I really believe that the student earning the privilege and having responsibility is a key part here. When my children attended Wasilla High, it was an open campus for lunch, and I would go and sign them out and sign them back in. Then they had the 30-minute lunch, and it didn't work at all. For me to even meet with my kids during lunch was impossible, and it was really important in those days that I at least touch base with them part of the day. And I think maybe parents could now have another time when they can touch base with their kids if they have that opportunity. I agree that there's going to be an issue. Somebody's going to have an accident. Something's going to happen. But we cannot protect our kids. I mean, they could hurt themselves someplace else. They could, you know, so there's all kinds of other things that can happen. I certainly hope that we are very clear with the responsibility and the safety issues. I'm supporting this. I think that the process was good for the Student Advisory Board to bring it to us and for us to really evaluate it and look at all the aspects of it. And I think that we've done a pretty good job of looking at it, and I appreciate the survey that was done and the work Ms. Spargo did. Thank you.
Ms. Wagner?
I think off-campus lunch, if we get it, it's going to be a huge motivation to everyone for good grades. Holy cow. Like, I think a lot of my friends that I saw who probably are sitting at a 2.0 would want to raise it, because this is a huge privilege, and it would be, like, awesome just to get a break from school for a second, because we're there all day, every day, work, and then we have lunch, and we're still sitting in school in the same environment. You know, most people are encouraged to just walk out the doors and skip anyway. More students get to leave to go to other schools, or we already have off-campus, and then we get to choose to come back. I left my homework. I need to do an assignment, because I have 6th and 7th off, and on my 6th period, I leave, and then 7th period, I come back to the library. And, you know, in between that short hour of class, I can get an accident. I could do anything, but my parents are letting me drive to school as a junior. I mean, as a senior, and juniors and seniors are learning how to be adults. Like, we're about to get into work, and most of us are in the workforce, and I have lunch breaks at my work, and I can't leave for 20 minutes and not show up. Like, I'd get fired. Like, I understand the concerns of the board, but, you know, we have such high requirements for off-campus lunch. Eligible students should be a great group to pilot the program, so I think we should just give them a chance.
Are there any more comments from the board or anyone in the audience? Is the board ready to vote? Okay. And it passes 4-1. Thank you, Mrs. Spargo. Thank you, Student Advisory Board. And congratulations and be safe. Okay. Could we please move action item B?
I move action item B. Oops. The FY17 winter revised budget.
Second.
Do we have an administrative report?
No administrative report.
Okay. Do we have any public comment on this item? Seeing none, we will vote. Is there any board discussion on this? I'm sorry. Do you want to say something?
Hallelujah.
Seeing none, we will vote. And that passes unanimously. Can I have someone move action item C?
I'll move action item C, acceptance of FY 2015-16 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
I'll second.
And we do have a report on this. Mr. Stone?
Yes, President Dearman, members of the board, Assistant Superintendent Luke Fulp, and BDO Assurance Partner Eric Campbell are here to present the CAFR.
Thank
Thank you, Superintendent Stone, President Dearman, and members of the school board. Tonight, we're going to be presenting the FY16 Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, and we have Eric Campbell, Assurance Partner with BDO, here tonight to give that presentation. Briefly, before Eric gets started, I just want to talk about a few notable items around this audit. First and foremost, it represents a clean audit. We received an unmodified opinion, and there were no material weaknesses or significant deficiencies identified with our internal controls, which is always a good thing, based on the test that BDO did. But also, there were no issues with compliance. Mr. Campbell will most likely touch on that during his report, speaking specifically to their opinion. In addition, we are submitting the CAFR, the FY16 CAFR, for consideration of the Association of School Business Officials International Certificate of Excellence in Financial Reporting. This is if we do meet all criteria set out by them and it goes through that peer review, it'll be the eighth year in a row in which this district has met those standards. And I mentioned that tonight because it's not just about receiving an award. We do a lot of work in addition to the basic financial statements that we're required to publish based on Alaska State statute and OMB standards at the federal level. Specifically, we have an introductory section that's 20 pages that discusses the reporting entity, the governance, profile of the districts, our mission, goals, and objectives, our budget process, factors affecting the financial condition of the district, and then a financial forecast. So that's all incorporated into that introductory section. That's above and beyond what other districts are doing. There's only 5 districts in the state that meet these additional requirements, and I just want this community and everyone to be aware that there's more to this that's provided in terms of transparency and reporting. A lot of work does go into this. And then in addition to the introductory section, the CAFR requires a statistical section, which begins on page 153. There's lots of schedules and tables with the statistical sections, about 30 pages. It touches on financial trends, revenue capacity, debt capacity, demographic and economic information, and operating information. So a lot of the information that we present is 10-year historical and really makes this a comprehensive report, thus the comprehensive annual financial report. But that being said, I just want to thank Director of Finance Ashley Bjornson, our accounting supervisor Alicia Campbell, and the entire accounting department who worked really hard on this report, as well as Charity Phillips Little and Marianne Wick, who assisted with the publication of the document. And similar to all of our other financial reports and updates, the CAFR can be found for the listening audience on our website. It was uploaded today, and it has links within the PDF so people can navigate it very easily and see what is being presented as far as our financial record for year ending June 30th, 2016. With that, I will turn it over to Eric Campbell. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Superintendent Stone, President Dearman, and members of the board. My name is Eric Campbell. I'm with BDO. We performed the audit for June 30, 2016 of Matsubara School District. And taking you through at a high level of your CAFR, as Luke said in the beginning, we have the introductory section. And after the introductory section is the financial section. The financial section is what we as auditors examine to make sure that they are in compliance with generally accepted accounting principles. And it starts on actually page 1, which is after the introductory section. Page 1 is the independent auditor's report, page 1 through 3. And on the second page of that independent auditor's report up top, we state that, in our opinion, the financial statements referred to above present fairly in all material respects the financial position of the Matsubara School District at June 30, 2016. As Luke said, that's an unmodified opinion or a clean opinion on your financial statements. Then on pages 5 through 20 is management's discussion and analysis. I always highly recommend that, you know, the board members at least read the introductory section and the management's discussion and analysis. Those two sections kind of, in a nutshell, give you a summary of what's happened for the year throughout the district. Then on page 22 of the financial statements, that's sort of the start of your basic financial statements. And page 22 and 23, these are the only two schedules in the financial statements that are on what we call the full accrual basis of accounting. And on the full accrual, it includes all of your long-term assets, short-term assets, long-term liabilities, short-term liabilities. Unlike the rest of the financial statements, the rest of the financial statements are on sort of the budgetary basis or the modified accrual basis of accounting. So if we bring in all of your assets and all of your liabilities, you'll see that your total assets, about halfway down the page there on page 22, statement of net position, your total assets and deferred outflow resources are $87.9 million. Now, of that $87.9 million, $32 million is cash and receivables, $19 million is capital assets, that's equipment, and this year you actually added two buildings. And then 34 of that is related to, as part of the pension liability. We'll go over that in a second. Your total liabilities are $173.7 million. So assets, $87.9 million. Liabilities, $173.7 million. So that leaves a net position of a negative $88.3 million. Now, that negative net position, the biggest portion of that is your pension liability. Last year, there were new auditing accounting standards that required that all governmental entities have to bring in, and bringing it back to Alaska, especially the school district, all the school districts have to bring in their portion of the unfunded liability for the PERS and the TERS retirement program within the state of Alaska. So the PERS and the TERS retirement programs, I think last time it was like $18 billion, I believe, underfunded. So all of the governmental entities within the state of Alaska, they cut that pie up, and they, this is your portion, this is your portion. So if you take the portions that are in your assets and your liabilities, $119 million of that liability is attributable to the Mat-Su River School District. So that's the big liability on the financial statements. Then starting on page 24. On page 24, this is the modified accrual basis of accounting. Now these are the schedules that you're basing your budgets on. Now your budgets are they're based on current financial resources, and right now you're working on the 2018 budget, and you're looking at the resources you have available now to budget forward then. So looking on page 24, far right-hand column, you can see your total assets are $37.2 million. Your total liabilities are $15.2 million. So you have a total fund balance of $22 million. And going down along the bottom line there, $14.7 million of that fund balance belongs to the general fund. $4.8 million is your capital projects fund, and $2.4 million are your smaller non-major funds. And of that $2.4 million, $1.7 is in student transportation, and $648,000 is in nutrition services. On page 26 is your statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance. Looking at the far right-hand column, you can see your total revenues for the year were $283 million. Your total expenses, $287 million. So your revenues were almost $4.1 million greater than your revenues this year. Within there, we have the largest portion of your revenues and expenditures are your general fund. $240 million of revenues in the general fund, $240 million of expenses. So your revenues exceeded your expenses of $55,000 in the general fund. There was a transfer out of $2.6 million. That transfer went to capital projects and nutrition services, $1.9 million to capital projects and $671,000 to nutrition services, which resulted in a decrease in fund balance of just shy of $2.6 million in the general fund. Then you have proprietary funds. The largest one of these is your internal service fund, which is basically workers' comp. You have $2.5 million of assets and $2.5 million of liabilities in your workers' comp account. And for the year, your workers' comp revenues and expenses were $1.5 million. Then I always like to point out Schedule F1. It's on page 54 of the financial statements. The reason I always like to point out Schedule F1 is, you know, the management is always, they're working sometimes 2 years in advance, between a year and 2 years in advance on the prior year's budget. Like I said, right now you're working on FY18's budget, and there's just a lot of educated, you know, estimates going into creating that budget. So I always like to see, how did we do? When we did our original budget, how did we do basically 2 years later with that original budget? So if you take a look on page 54, your total revenues, we were budgeting $229 million, and our revenue actually came in at $240 million. So we had $11.6 million more revenue than we had anticipated. Our original expenditures were budgeted for $233 million, and we spent $240 million, so we were $6.6 million above that original budget. And if you take a look, originally we were budgeting, out of the general fund, you were budgeting a deficit of $4.9 million of expenditures over revenues, and at the end of the year, you actually had an increase of $55,000. So you actually, in the general fund, you actually did $5 million better than what you had originally budgeted. So that's why I always like, I like to point out this schedule, because this is, there's a lot that goes into this original budget. I mean, there's so much to try to figure out what's going to happen 2 years from now. You know, what's your student count going to be? What's, you know, what's PERS going to be? What's TERS going to be? You know, what's, you know, just, you know, everything going into it. So. And then there's a requirement, the last year of this requirement, I believe, that you spend 70% of expenditures in the general fund on instructional type activities, and you spent actually 76%, so you exceeded the 70% threshold, so you're in compliance with that requirement. Then your G schedules, G50 on pages 55 through 58 is breaks down your net pension obligation in a little more detail. Your H schedules shows your revenues and expenditures in your general fund. And then it also has your prior year comparison in there, so you can see how you did compared to the prior year. And then Schedule H3 shows your expenditures in a lot more detail in your general fund. Then your J schedules on page 71 through 77 has all of your smaller funds. You know, up front we had your general fund, we had capital projects, and then we had one column for all of your non-major funds. Page 71 through 77 breaks out the revenues for all of those smaller funds. So on page 78, you can see student transportation, your total revenues of $16.5 million, total expenditures of $16.3 million, $290,000 increase in fund balance for student transportation. And then on page 85, the final page of the Chase schedules, that total is the column that rolled forward to the front when we're looking at the front schedules. And then each one of those columns has a separate schedule in the K section. So if there's any fund that you have a particular interest in, you can go to the K schedules and it'll have your details of revenues and expenses. And then your L schedules are the same thing for your capital projects. And then you're capped at a 10%, we used to call it an unreserved fund balance. You're capped at a 10% fund balance. You know, your unrestricted fund balance can be 10% of less of your total expenses for the year. You were at $4.6 million for the year, so you're in compliance with that requirement. Page 194 through 196 is your schedule of federal awards. This has all of the federal grants that your business department and your operations department are administering. Page 201 is your state schedule. And then the very back section is your single audit section. And the single audit section has three opinions. One opinion to make sure that you're in compliance with internal controls over with government auditing standards. And then there's a compliance to make sure you're in compliance with the state compliance requirements and the federal compliance requirements. And as Luke noted, there are no compliance violations, no significant deficiencies or internal control problems. Then we always do like a, you know, a, sort of some trend data. And you can see over the last 10 years, the population of the borough has increased by almost a third, from 77,000 to 100,000 people. Your school enrollment went from 15,800 to 18,500 students since 2007. Your employees, 1,931, an increase of 34% over 2007, over the last 10 years. Average teacher salaries are at $69,300, 28% increase from 2007 over the last 10 years. Total revenues, the light green bar is excluding the PERS and TERS on behalf payments. The smaller, darker green bar, except for 2015, is the state of Alaska contributes to the PERS and TERS pension liability on your behalf. That's that portion. So you can see your total revenues were $265,000, excluding the on-behalf payments. Total expenditures, $269,000, up from $166,000 over the last 10 years. Total expenses per student, $14,500, 38% increase over 2007. General fund revenues from $141 million to $222 million over the last 10 years. General fund expenditures from $140 million to $223 million. Workers' comp expense, $1.5 million in 2016, $442,000 in 2007. General fund balance is up to $11.2 million in 2016 from virtually non-existent, back in 2007. Of course, back then you weren't allowed to keep much of your fund balance. There was always, most of it lapsed back to the borough at the time. And then you can see the lapse over the last 10 years of fund balance to the borough. 2007, you lapsed almost $1.6 million to the borough. Almost 1.9 in 2008, and in the last 3 years, you were not required to pay the difference back to the borough. Borough appropriation from $38 million to $52.7 million over the last 10 years, 39% increase. Appropriation per student, 19% increase from $2,399 to $2,852 per student. Student transportation revenues and expenses just over $16 million. Food service revenues and expenses just over $6 million. This is one of the funds that you're always supplementing from the general fund. Federal single audit, federal funding, $17.7 million. State of Alaska funding, $199 million for FY16. And again, no findings, no question costs, and unmodified opinion on financial statements. So that concludes the presentation. And I just want to point out that we're about a month early this year, and you had turnover in your department also. So your business department did a great job, even though you had turnover, getting prepared and being ready for the audit. Every year we have little to no adjustments to fix your financial statements. To fix the books, when we get here, they're closed out, they're accurate, and it's in great shape. So they do a good job preparing for the audit. So,
Member Larson?
Just one quick question on our pension liability. Is that for, I know that's tier one, two, and three. Is that teachers that are existing and teachers that are retired?
Yeah.
Well certified, so it's the whole gamut, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much all of the payments that are going to be due in the future for your prior and current teachers and classified employees, less the assets that are put aside to pay for those liabilities. And the theory is it's gonna work its way down to zero over the next 30 years with the payments that you're currently making at the current rates.
As the pensioners, How do I put it nicely? I'm a pensioner. So
yeah.
As we leave.
Mm-hmm. They're using a discount rate of 8%. So
yeah.
We'll see how that works out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Could I have someone please move action item? Oh, we do. Oh, yes, we do. I'm sorry. Okay, is there any more discussion by the board before we vote on this, on the CAFR? Okay, seeing none, we'll vote. Yes? Oh, would anyone from the audience like to make a comment or come forward to speak on the CAFR before we vote? Okay. Thank you, Kelsey. And that pen passes unanimously. Could I please have someone move action item D?
I move action item D, certified new hires.
I'll second that.
Yes. Yeah, there are only five of us. And Yvonne is not here. Okay. Thank you. Do we have anything additionally from the administration on this?
No, this is just a single certified approval.
Okay. Do we have any comment from the public on this? Any discussion from board members? Okay. We're ready to vote. It's not there. Oh, there it is. Did you hear?
Yeah, I voted.
Oh, you did? Okay. Is it slow?
Why is it that?
Oh, what happened? It passed unanimously that time. Okay. All right. Oh, that's it.
When we get there.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Okay, we have no non-action items. Looking ahead at future items and future business, our January 4th board meeting has been canceled. We will have a regular school board meeting here at the school board building on January 18th at 6 p.m., and we will have a regular school board meeting on February 1st. At 6 p.m. And it's in what? 2107?
Ooh, that's in the future.
It, what? 2107.
2107.
It should be
2017. Oh, 2017. Oh, on the screen. Oh, 2017. Oh, up there. Oh, yeah, that'd be a very long break. That'd be nice. Okay. Oh, yes.
So I won't be here at the next school board meeting on the 18th.
January 18th, you'll be out? Okay. Anyone else? Everyone else will be here? Okay. We are on our second part of persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to come forward and be heard on non-agenda items? Now's your chance. Come right ahead.
Good evening. My name is Tim Walters. I'm president of the Mat-Su Education Association. I represent about 1,200 members here in the Valley. And earlier hearing the talk about school safety in our charter schools, it just made me think that recently I had been talking to members in the schools, and there are still a number of our schools where the teachers, in case of a shooter situation, still have to walk out into the hall to lock their doors. I heard, and some schools I know had put magnets in the doors to always keep the doors open, but I heard some reports that the fire marshal has told them that they're not allowed to keep those magnets in the doors because that creates a fire hazard. So I just wanted to make the board aware that we still have several schools where the teachers, in case of an emergency situation, have to walk out into the hall to lock their door. I did hear about one school where they have some slides to put up on the pneumatic arms, and the one teacher I spoke with happens to be too short to actually reach the pneumatic arm, so she has to get a chair or something or pull a desk over to stand up on that. So we definitely still have some security and safety concerns in our schools. And I know there's a whole lot going on, but if you would please keep that on your list, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to come forward? Okay, we will move on now to correspondence and board committee reports. Did anyone have a board committee within the last 2 weeks that they would like to report on? Okay, I have some correspondence that I will share with you and I would like to read publicly. Yes? For today? Should we? No, I don't think so. Do we?
So today, myself, Kelsey Trimmer, and Dr. Dierman and Ole Larson participated in an evaluation committee for an RFP.
All right, I'm going to distribute this, and then I will read this for the audience. Yes. This was in response to Member Rothfuss.
Chair.
Yeah, from Tim. Yes. This is in response to Mr. Walters' email to the board inviting us to participate with the Public Employees Health Trust to learn more in regards to our insurance and have dialogue with their Chief Financial Officer, Rhonda Kidder. And so this is a letter that I am sending to Ms. Kidder on behalf of the board. Dear Ms. Kidder, I am writing to invite you to present to the Mat-Su Borough School Board at a regularly scheduled school board meeting during the spring of 2017. While I understand that you have presented to school districts and employees regarding the benefits provided by the Public Education Health Trust, the MSBSD board would like to ask you to provide the following information. One, will the PEHT be willing to provide de-identified HIPAA-compliant claims data specific to the Mat-Su School District's covered employees? While we expect, based on the denial of our prior requests, that this will not be made available, what information could the district access to create actionable steps or strategies to improve employee wellness, contain costs, and evaluate plan performance? Two, what measures are the PEHT current currently taking to encourage member wellness and improved plan performance? 3, what is the PEHT doing to promote a more consumer-driven approach to health care spending by members? 4, does the PEHT offer any transparency tools for members to assist members in shopping for care? 5, can you provide an explanation of the recent 25% premium increase for Medical Plan C, specifically explaining the cost drivers which led to the inequitable increase across the plan options available in the PEHT? 6, what specific cost containment measures is the PEHT engaging in to lower expenses for both members and districts? While the Mat-Su School District experienced a significant increase to health insurance for the current year, our interest in understanding the above goes beyond financial. Health insurance costs as a portion of our budget are escalating at a rate that significantly impacts our operational means. However, we are also interested in understanding the health and wellness of the employees who make up our organization. We are guided by 3 primary ideals: being responsive, resourceful, and relevant. Without a stronger understanding of this major cost driver and its impact on our staff, we are hindered in our ability to operate as efficiently and effectively as possible. We look forward to hearing from you and other community health leaders about what we can do to positively and proactively impact health and health care. Sincerely, Dr. Donna Dearman, School Board President.
We'll make a couple edits.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so this is the response, our reply to her, our request, and hopefully we will be able to dialogue with the Public Education Health Trust and see if we can get some answers to these questions that can move us forward as we try to find ways to provide good, sound health coverage for all of us and bring the cost down. I guess that's it in a nutshell. Mr. Michelson.
Will we have an opportunity to add questions to this? I'm kind of specifically interested in the health trust's participation or compliance with, I think, requests that have come from the healthcare administration, where they're looking at, part of, I think it was HB 74 that would pass the Medicaid reform. I think it included also a healthcare administration examination of all public employees being under, one type of plan, and whether or not the Public Health Trust participated in contributing the information that we're actually wanting as well. So if there was, and I can clarify that question, so when she's here, I can be a little bit more articulate about it, but
I think that since we're asking to meet in the spring, I think we have significant time that we can, build upon these questions and have more available.
Thank you.
Should this come to fruition. Thank you. Are there any other questions? No? Okay. Is there any other information on correspondence or any board reports? Seeing none, we will now have comments from administration.
Assistant Superintendent Folt.
No comments.
Assistant Superintendent Dr. Goyette.
No comments.
And I just want to wish everybody a happy holiday and looking forward to a great second semester. Also, want to thank Joe Schmidt, our safety coordinator, for the work that he's done and for the progress that we were able to make over his tenure, and wish him well as he goes on to Anchorage School District. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Wagner.
So just a reminder that we have a school board meeting on January 17th at Westland Middle, and I just want to say thank you to you guys to like for passing off-campus lunch. That's amazing. I ended up telling everyone on all my social medias while we were here. Everyone wanted me to update them, so I did. And just happy holidays to everybody. So that's all.
Dr. Walton?
Thank you. I attended graduation at Bruchel. There was, I think, 15 or so students who finished their work to have a winter graduation. That this one was basically for the students. They did their bell ringing and had cake. Many of them will probably walk in May, but this was their celebration, and it was a lot of fun and a lot of great information about the students and how they overcame a lot of things to graduate. I attended a few other concerts and things, and I appreciate all the work that goes into it and know that the students really enjoy doing these things most of the time. Some of them are a little shy and don't want to actually participate, but I appreciate that, and I just enjoy the singing and just the celebrations that they have. I want to say a happy holiday to everyone and hope that we are all safe and that when we can get together with family and friends that we look for joy. Thank you.
Member Larson.
Thank you. Congratulations to the school district and to the budget department for this. Getting the report done, what I like to hear from auditors and which I've heard is exactly tonight what we heard is there's very little issues with the audit, which means our Matsu School Borough District comprehensive annual financial report is totally transparent. And you can tell if somebody's doing their job, but you can also tell if somebody's going beyond their job and is dedicated to it. And I think, I know that this shows that, as well as in other areas within our school district, like the work that Joe Schmidt's done with safety and security, as well as everybody around him that's worked with him and has done it. I know Joe hasn't done it all by himself, and but the show the areas that we need to bring our security up, and we're doing that. It's not like you've got a report and then all of a sudden it just sits on the shelf. Same thing with all the reports I see. They're action reports, they're things that are getting done. And it's really nice to see that people are not just doing their job, that they're dedicated to their job. They really care about what they're doing. And it all stems around educating and working with children and getting our kids into the 21st century at high marks so they are job eligible. I wish everybody Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and all the above. It's a great time of year. A lot of great programs I've been to, a lot of good band and choir. Love to watch the band and choir. I mean, it's amazing. And I'm glad to see that our borough assembly got their wish to have people sing there. And I'd like to see that, maybe not every meeting, but every once in a while, have them a reminder of where this budget's going, that we can give them a little bit back. Thank you.
Member Tremor.
Just want to congratulate the district, Mr. Fulp, everybody involved on the annual financial report and the audit, and congratulations on continuing to do an exemplary job on this and make the district shine. And I just want to make a quick comment on the driving My son is driving to Wasilla back and forth, so I hope this motivates him for grades. And I'm a parent, and I do worry about it, but at the same time, if I was worried and couldn't trust my son to drive, then I would have to take his vehicle. So it's something that you have to give them the privilege if they earn the privilege of driving. So you guys went about it in a great way and did a great job. So congratulations to you guys as the advisory board. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year and whatever holiday you may celebrate, and have a great winter break. Thanks.
Mr. Michelson.
I appreciate the movement on the charter school safety issue, and really glad to see that's moving along in a real tangible way. And I also appreciate, is really thoughtful, good assessments and attention paid to some of that concern. So I really feel confident that, the money will really go where it's needed to bring those schools up to par. It is good to see in action kind of this budget document, as far as, programs and the amount of money and the percent of the money that we're actually putting into the classroom, which is well above and beyond what is required. And that's come to be the expectation in the Massu School District, is that we try to put the money where it really, really makes a difference for people. Over the weekend, I attended the Lego competition at Career Tech. I got to spend some time with the principal, I can't remember his name, at Twinley Bridge. It was always a joy to spend time with him, and got to see, kids having fun with these gadgets, but they also were presenting how they would solve problems with technology and how they had to cooperate and come to agreement on planning how they were going to determine there was a problem and then develop a solution for it that was based really in robotics. So it's good to see that technology moving forward. And then today I attended the credit completion at the PACE program. And it's good to see kind of where we're spending the money in the budget document, but it's also really nice to see our mission displayed in sometimes just on really unseen ways, where the amount of money that we put into programs like PACE and how kind of magnified the difference is for individual kids and their families. So the parents of the kids spoke very eloquently about what they thought that their kids were receiving, and the kids spoke about their experiences and the partnership with DJJ and the fact that we're providing these kinds of opportunities is just really a way of living, kind of living the mission here in the district. So I really appreciate that, and wish everybody a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and see you next year.
I will keep this short and wish everyone a very happy holiday, a safe New Year, and in keeping with our rebranding, I will say to you, please go out and relax, refresh, and regroup. And we'll see you in 2017. And with that, I will ask that someone please move us into executive session.
I move that we adjourn to executive session.
Second.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded. Are there any objections? Okay, executive session AS 44.62.310 and board policy 9321, matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation. Present in executive session this evening, all members of the board, Superintendent Stone, Assistant Superintendents Luke Fulp and Dr. Monica Goyette, Director of Human Resources, Katie Gardner, and Attorney Saul Friedman. We are now adjourned to executive session.